And now, here's physician and veterinarian Dr. Joel Wallach with his Deadly Recipes lecture for your good health.
Our goal, of course, is to have everybody die after 120. I don't care if it's 150 or 200, whatever it is. We have the capacity, we have the knowledge to get you well beyond 100, no doubt about it. Everybody, when they die past 120, should only have two pieces of paper in your health chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. If you have a 4-inch thick health chart full of all these surgeries and all these diseases, your doctor has failed you. The system has failed you. And we want to be known as the Home Depot of health. We want people, when they think of health, well, I'm not going to run to the doctor. I can do this myself. Just like when you're going to lay tile in your house. Does everybody call a contractor now? No, they say, I'm going to run to Home Depot and price some tile there. And so we have the capacity. Again, all the experts in genetics and gerontology tell us that we have the capacity very clearly to live to be 100. It's not like it's a secret. Everybody agrees on that. It's not a mystery. It's not a fable we're coming up with that you can live to be well beyond 100. People do it all the time. How many, raise your hand if you've ever made a dish from a recipe, a cookbook, a magazine, card collection? I mean, we've all done that. I mean, us guys, you know, they don't raise their hands, but yeah, they love to cook, make pancakes, make Pillsbury Doughboy muffins, you know. And the reason why they put pictures in cookbooks and things like that is so that you know where you're going. Okay, that's why they put the pictures there. The same thing is true when it comes to health care. We've been using the same recipe, if you will, for health care in the industrialized nations for over 300 years. And so we can predict what the recipe outcome is going to be. We can predict that already. We know what a 25-year-old looks like. We know what a 50-year-old looks like. We know what a 75-year-old looks like and a 100-year-old and so forth. And so you can kind of look down the line. And if you follow your doctor's instructions, you eat the way everybody's eating, you know what you're going to look like. Well, this is a pretty typical 85-year-old American. You're in a nursing home. You have Alzheimer's disease. You have macular degeneration. You've had cataract operations. You're deaf. Your teeth are gone because you had periodontal disease, which is osteoporosis of the face and jaw. Your thyroid has been removed for many reasons, so you're on drugs. You've had your shoulders replaced. You've had carpal tunnel surgeries. You've had your finger joints replaced. You've had multiple back surgeries. You've had angiograms, angioplasties. Stents have been inserted in your coronary arteries. You've had quadruple bypass. You've had a heart transplant. You've had maybe one lobe or an entire lung removed for many different things, including lung cancer, which is the most common cause of cancer in both men and women, regardless if you smoke or not. 95% of the people who get lung cancer don't smoke. Never did smoke. That's because they're frying the fish after church and inhaling all those free radicals coming out of that frying oil. And then you can have your stomach banded and bypassed to lose weight. Or maybe you had ulcers and had your stomach removed. You've had kidneys removed. You've had kidney stone operations. You've had gallbladders removed. You had your colon removed for polyps and cancer. Women have had hysterectomy. Men have had their prostate gland removed. And by the way, the newest information on the PSA, how many of you have heard of the PSA test, ladies and gentlemen, you know, for prostate activity? Since 1987 to now, when they actually done the survey, when they removed prostates because they thought it was cancerous by actual biopsy, only 2% were actually cancerous. 98% false alarm. No man who's done everything right has ever died from prostate cancer. You can die at 80 and have prostate cancer, but the prostate cancer didn't kill you. Nobody should ever die of prostate cancer. They've had hip replacements, knee replacements. Feet have been amputated because they had diabetes. They're on 25 different medications for lowering cholesterol, for dealing with blood pressure, for thyroid, for diabetes and many a pain and so forth. And if you follow the doctor's instructions, this is where you're going. This is where you're going to wind up. Wah! I mean, I'm excited. This is the recipe I want. I'm going to follow this recipe. No, I'm not too excited about that one. Maybe we have to get rich to live a long time. Well, there's never been a billionaire who lived to be 100. Think about it. Now, if money were important to living to be 100, you'd think that billionaires would live to be 100. There's never been a single one. This is from Forbes magazine. They said the average lifespan for billionaires is 78. The youngest one to die was 58 years old. He was the richest man in the United States. He was the heir to the Walmart empire. His daddy, old Sam Walton, when he died, left his entire empire to this guy, and he died at 58. The richest man in America died at 58. You see, money didn't help him at all, did it? I know, it's intelligence. That's it. We got to get more degrees in school. That'll do it. There's never been a Nobel Prize winner ever lived to be 100. Linus Pauling came close. The only guy who ever had two unshared Nobel Prizes, got to be smart, died of prostate cancer. You don't have to do that, right? Died of prostate cancer at 94. So there's never been a billionaire lived to be 100. There's never been a Nobel Prize winner lived to be 100. Ah, why didn't I think of it before? It's fitness. That's what it is. Everybody says, doctors say fitness is good for you. You got to exercise. Don't worry about supplementing because you get everything you need from your food, but just exercise. With the exception of two black gentlemen from the old Negro Baseball League days in the 1920s and 30s, there's never been a professional athlete ever lived to be 100. Now, fitness is important. You'd think a significant number of professional athletes would be living to be 100, because not only do this fitness thing, but they also have lots of money. So money and fitness combined doesn't save athletes. The average lifespan for professional athletes is 62. I want to go there. So what is it? What is it? How do people live to be 100? We know it's not money. We know it's not intelligence. It's not fitness. So how do people live to be 100? Again, we can extrapolate information from animals. We've, in the last 75 years, tripled the lifespans of animals. Pet animals, laboratory animals, farm animals. We've tripled the lifespans. Do we do that with wonder drugs? No. Do we do that with genetically engineered protein stem cells? Do we do that with heart transplants? No. We did it just by tinkering with the vitamins and minerals and the essential fatty acids and the amino acids in their little food. Human beings need 90 essential nutrients. You all know that. We need 16 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 essential amino acids, 3 essential fatty acids. And fortunately for us, our food plants, our grains, vegetables, fruits, and nuts can take carbon dioxide from the air, use the sun's energy, and a process known as photosynthesis to manufacture carbon compounds. Wood, cellulose, starch, sugar, vitamins, amino acids, fatty acids. Yeah, plants can do all that. But you'll notice that plants cannot manufacture minerals. Plants cannot manufacture minerals, and 2/3 of the 90 essential nutrients are minerals. That's why we like to focus on minerals, because even a blind hog can get an acorn sometime, as my daddy used to say, which means that even if you're eating a cheeseburger with lettuce and tomatoes and onions on it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you can get some vitamins. You're going to get some vitamin C and beta-carotene and folic acid from the lettuce and tomatoes and onions. You're going to get some omega-3 essential fatty acids from the onions and the little sesame seeds on the top of the bun. You're going to get some B vitamin from the vitamin B enriched white flour in the bun. You're going to get some amino acids from the cheese, if it's real cheese, and the meat. You might get some calcium if it's real cheese on the sandwich, but that's it. But you could live to be 18 to 20 years of age. You might even be able to have babies and be fertile, you know, until 18, 20 years of age. But if all you're living on is hamburgers or cheeseburgers or lettuce and tomatoes and onions on a breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're in trouble, because plants cannot manufacture minerals. And most of our degenerative diseases, most of the things that kill us and worry us as we live, are mineral deficiency diseases. Plants only need 9 minerals to be happy. We need 60. Plants can do very well on 3 elements, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Farmers cannot afford to put in all 60 essential minerals. That's why they give animals pellets to make up that difference. They give them the pellets with all the nutrients in it to make up the difference, because they don't know how many minerals are in that pasture. They could analyze it, but are they going to put 60 minerals in this pasture, this 10-acre pasture for these cows? No. So it's cheaper just to give the cow the pellets. The longest-lived people in the industrialized nations, the one that have the highest average of longevity, are the Okinawans, and they live to be 85 on the average, and we live somewhere around 70, 72 on the average in America. And you go to Okinawa, their soil is nothing but red sandy clay, much like the state of Georgia. There's a little bit of extra iron in there, but that wouldn't explain their 15 years living longer than us. And so I went there, spent almost a week, spent the first couple of days at the Department of Agriculture studying the soil and soil chemistry and plant chemistry there in Okinawa. Didn't find out anything really unique. And then we talked to the old people. We talked about 15 of them. Half of them were men, 7 of them were men, 8 were women. These were all 100-plus-year-olds. And we only had to ask one question, because this is a 25-year study. 25-year study in the Okinawans. It was identical twin doctors. One got a medical degree from Harvard. The other got his PhD in pharmacy. And they spent 25 years there trying to figure out why the Okinawans lived so long. They counted how many steps they took, how many times a day they took a pee, what the volume of their pee was, how many hours they slept, how many calories they took in. At the end of the 25 years, they said, "We don't know. I don't know." And so we weren't going to re-ask these questions. We only asked them one question. We got each one individually into a room so they wouldn't contaminate the others with their answers. We didn't want them thinking about the question. We only want them to hear the question, give the answer. So the question was, what did you do with your wood ashes and your rice straw ashes from your heating and cooking from the previous day? And the men said, "We don't know. You know, we're out there doing the samurai thing with the swords and doing the karate stuff, and we don't know." But the women, every one of them, gave the same story. "Oh, we took the wood ashes and the rice straw ashes and put them in the garden, as our grandmothers and our mothers taught us to do, as a fertilizer. We mixed it in the noodle dough and the rice because it gave it a nicer taste and color. It turned it yellow instead of white. And then thirdly, we cut our salt with it. 10 parts wood ashes or rice straw ashes with 1 part salt. Because salt was very expensive, and so they would cut it, just like a drug dealer cuts expensive cocaine, so that it would last longer. So they got plant minerals in 3 different ways: as fertilizer in the garden, culinary ashes, mix it in their noodles and rice, and also by cutting their salt with it. And wood ashes and rice straw ashes are the plant minerals that are left when you burn away the carbon in the fuel. And people have been using plant minerals as a supplement since before written history." And then they said one thing I didn't know. They said, "And lastly, an ash merchant came by every morning." An ash merchant. Now, what does that tell you? An ash merchant came by every morning and would buy our excess wood ashes and our excess rice straw ashes, and they would sell these ashes to farmers who had fields that were much larger than their personal production of ash could fertilize. It was an industry because they knew it was important for fertilization of that field. The first patent in 1790, the first U.S. patent, U.S. patent number one, was how to make white wood ashes for export. They were burning tens of thousands of acres of forest. They just set those forests on fire and collect the wood ashes and ship them to England. That's because England had burned every tree on the British Isles. They were forced to go to coal. And so they were using the wood ashes from America for their food and their garden fertilizer and cutting their salt with it. And all this information is in the book Hell's Kitchen, a lot of detail. Now here's a little different recipe for those of you who are sports fans. Harold Stilson from Deerfield Beach, Florida, hits a hole-in-one on his 101st birthday. Went out to play golf on his 101st birthday, hits a hole-in-one, 108-yard, par 3 hole. I mean, this is his 6th one. You have to have good enough vision to see that stick holding up the flag at 108 yards. You got to have a good grip on the club, good eye-hand coordination. Hit that little banny chicken egg-sized ball into a teacup-sized hole 108 yards away in one whack. Wouldn't you rather have that lifestyle than being in a nursing home at age 85? Hoo-ah! And you know he doesn't have Alzheimer's disease because he's color-coordinated. Shangri-La. How many of you have heard of the term Shangri-La? Sure, everybody remembers that one. It was a mythical place. You could live to be 200-300 years of age if you followed their lifestyle. Very clean-cut lifestyle. Everybody had their own little garden. They put wood ashes in. And this novel was actually written about real people called the Hunzas who live in what's now northern Pakistan. They were so famous for health and longevity. They were the longest-lived and the healthiest people on earth. And so even the King of England sent his personal physician, one Sir Robert McCarrison, to go there for 4 years. Went there for 4 years to study how they live so long and take the information back to the king. And Robert McCarrison was such a scientist, he brought 4,000 white rats with him. And he set up 1,000 rats on the Hunza diet, 1,000 rats on the New Delhi diet, and 1,000 rats on the English diet. Well, during that 4 years, the English rats died of the most horrible diseases, became cannibals and ate each other. And the New Delhi rats lived a little bit longer, but they didn't serve much any better. They had all diabetes and high blood pressure and all that, died of liver cancer. But the Hunza rats, they had to kill him at the end of the 4 years. It's time to leave. None of them had died. So he came back and he said, King, he says, I don't know what it is, but it has something to do with the diet. He told the king about the experiment he'd run. And so he says, here's a list of everything the Hunzas eat. And the king ate exactly as the Hunzas ate, and the king died at 72. At any rate, to make a long story short, there's two things in this book that jump out at you. Number one, they farm at 19,500-foot elevation. Their growing season is only 45 days. Now, the wheat and the corn and the rice we use, the growing season is 110 to 140 days. Can you grow those crops with a 45-day growing season? Nah. And so their total carbohydrate intake was a little chapati bread the size of a silver dollar pancake, one per person per day. That was it. The rest of their diet consisted of goat meat, lamb, mutton, chickens, eggs, cheese, butter, maybe some tomatoes and some green peppers and onions and garlic. And so it was a very low carbohydrate, very high animal fat, very high animal protein diet. And we know from animal experiments that when you have a low-carbohydrate diet, you can double and triple lifespans of animals if you give them all the nutrients. It's called undernutrition without malnutrition. You have to triple the vitamins and minerals and cut the carbohydrate intake by two-thirds, and you'll triple their lifespan. Cut the carbohydrate intake, triple the vitamins and minerals, and we can triple their lifespan. It's that easy. Number two, he noted in this book very clearly that they took their wood ashes every morning and mixed it in their garden. They cut their food with it and their salt with it. They put in their food as culinary ashes and cut their salt with it. Kind of like the Okinawans. Isn't that amazing? No indoor plumbing, no electricity, no hospitals, no clinics, no doctors, no pharmacies, no pharmacists, no pharmaceuticals, no drugs, no Social Security, no insurance, no Blue Cross Blue Shield, no HMOs. I mean, they got nothing you would go there for. So what makes them interesting to me was when you look at the book Rare Earths Forbidden Cures and you go to the chapter entitled The Age Beaters, the people that live around Lake Titicaca, Bolivia, Peru and Chile have more 100-year-olds per population than anybody else in the world. One per 500. In America, we have one per 10,000. They have 20 times the 100-year-olds we do. Think about that. They have nothing that you would go there for other than long life and happiness. Now, this remained the same since before written history until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882. We know the exact moment when everything changed. Monday, September 4th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 1882, Thomas Edison pulled the switch and turned on the first commercial. Actually, he didn't do it. His chief electrical technician, a guy by the name of Jonathan Leeves, pulled on the switch and turned on the first commercial electric generating plant in the world. By 1909, there was no less than a dozen patented kitchen electrical appliances. The first one was a toaster, interestingly enough. By 1950, every city and every industrialized nation had completely given up wood as a fuel and had gone to electricity and propane and natural gas. and liquid paraffin and kerosene and heating oils for heating and cooking. Here comes the most profound question you've ever had in your life. How many wood ashes are left over when you cook and heat with electricity and propane and liquid paraffin and natural gas? It's a numeral that looks like this and begins with a Z. Zero! And there was no great gathering of doctors. There was no great gathering of doctors wringing their hands saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? People have been using wood ashes as a source of nutritional minerals since before written history. And now suddenly in the space of just 70 years, after thousands and thousands of years of using wood ashes and rice straw ashes and peat moss ashes as fertilizer and supplements in our food as culinary ashes and cutting our salt with it, in a 70-year period, just a little blip on the radar, it's gone. And nobody said, well, where are we going to get our minerals? Doctors didn't do that. They just, whoa, this is exciting, electricity. Now we can get brighter lights in the surgery room. There was no congressional hearings. There was no Senate investigations. I mean, there was nothing going on. And now we're paying the price. Now we're paying the price because all the epidemics of degenerative diseases are caused by mineral deficiencies. Ralph Charles turned 100, still piloting commercial charter flights at age 100. Looks like he's in his 80s to me. He looks 20 years younger than his age. And so these are things we know. We can fly airplanes at 100. We can hit holes in one at 101 if we follow the right recipe. This gal, Connie Douglas Reeves, turned 101. And the day that she turned 101, they inducted her into the Cowgirl Hall of Fame because she had taught 30,000 young women how to ride Western saddle and how to barrel race. I mean, she's a legend in Texas. And they inaugurated her and inducted her into the Cowgirl Hall of Fame. Now, to me, she looks like one of those mean, feisty, rebellious patients. She's got her thumbs in her belt, her shoulders are back, her chin is up. You just imagine her doctor saying to her, Connie, I need you to give up salt now. You're 101. I got to worry about your blood pressure. Connie, I really need you to give up eggs and red meat and chicken skin and dairy products and go to margarine and boneless, skinless chicken breast. And I want you to eat tofu instead of red meat. And I need you to, in fact, use egg beaters instead of eggs and use margarine instead of butter. And Connie's going to ponder for a minute and then say, Doc, I've been using salt and eating butter and red meat and eggs and chicken skin before your bar, and I ain't going to give them up now. Let's give her a hoo-ah. Hoo-ah! Okay, this is kind of a cute one. These guys were in the Guinness World Book of Records, Percy and Florence Arrowsmith in Hereford, England. And they were put in the Guinness World Book of Records, not because of their age, but because they'd been married to each other for 80 years. And the Guinness Book of World Records asked them what their secret was. She said she drank a glass of red wine for breakfast and had a shot of whiskey before bed. And he said, well, I guess I can render it down to two words. And boy, they whipped out their pens and they were ready for this profound two words. And they said, well, what is it? And he said, yes, ma'am. Changing pace here a little bit. In April of 1990, the World Health Center and the Center for Disease Control did a survey in the top 32 industrialized nations. They said out of the top 32 industrialized nations, the United States ranked 17th in the world in health and longevity. Now, we spend more money for health care than all the other nations in the world put together. There's 92 nations. We spend more money for health care than the other 91. And yet, in April of 1990, we ranked 17th. Japan was number one. Let's give them a hoo-ah for being number one. Hoo-ah! 79.1. We were 75. Well, 10 years later, when they redid the study, Japan maintained number one at 74.5, but they had dropped 5 years, 4-point-something years they dropped. But they still maintained number one, but America dropped from 17th to 24th because we went from 75 to 70 in that 10-year period, from April of 1990 to June of 2000. Well, 5 years later, in August of 2005, the World Health Organization, Center for Disease Control, did another survey, and they published this in Newsweek magazine. I love this. Special edition, summer of 2005. It was on the stands until August 2005. The Future of Medicine, Your Health in the 21st Century. And they talked about new treatments. These are theoretical treatments, not existing ones for cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes. You know, they wanted more money for donations. And then in the article number one, page 10, there's this wonderful little paragraph. It said, America has built the world's highest high-tech medicine system in the world. I don't think we can argue with that. Surgeons don't even do surgery anymore. Robots do it, just like car assembly plants. Robots do most of the bone surgery now because they make so many mistakes in hip replacement and shoulder replacement surgery. They anesthetize you, and then they put you under this robot, and the robot cuts your bone off and sticks the new joint in there. And the robot does it all now because it's much more accurate than a human being. The doctor's in the back room drinking beer and sucking on a cigarette while the robot's doing the surgery. The sentence goes on to say, and yet the nation, meaning America, now ranks 46th in longevity. Now, there's 45 other countries whose peoples live longer than us. In 2005, the entire world spent $2.7 trillion for health care. And out of that $2.7 trillion the world spent, we alone spent $1.9 trillion, more than two-thirds. And we rank 46th in the world. Our health care system sucks, would be a kind way of putting it. You're not getting the bang for the buck. And you, not a single one of you in this room would put up with that in any other industry. You would not put up with this in any other industry. It's time for us to be the Home Depot of healthcare. People are looking for it. Hoo-ah. And then even worse, it goes on and says, and 41 other countries, including Cuba, for God's sakes, have achieved lower rates of infant mortality. They have a higher rate of babies surviving the first year and being born alive than we do. Cuba! Think about that. A poor, non-industrialized communist nation does a better job of live births and first-year survivability of our babies than us. Whose fault is that? Well, it's the medical system's fault. It's the medical doctor's fault. It's the pediatrician's fault. It's the OBGYN's fault. Now, there's things we can do immediately. They're going to be fun, and you'll love to do them, and you will do them. I guarantee you, it's just so easy. There's some things you won't like to change, and you're going to drag your toes and say, well, Doc, isn't there anything else I could change? I don't want to give that one up. So I'm going to show you one of each, and you'll get kind of a clue. This is out of the British Medical Journal, which is the equivalent of the Journal of the American Medical Association. This was December 23rd, 1997, and it's a big study, a big, huge study on more than 1,000 men between the ages of 45 and 59. Remember, this is the British Medical Journal. This is not a comic book or a newspaper even. They said, frequent sex helps men live longer. Hoo-ah! Those men who had sex twice a week live 50% longer than those who have sex only once a month. Well, this study came out the same month, December 4th, though, a couple of weeks early, the sex one, 1997. This was a study that was actually started in 1990, but they didn't report it until 1997. What they did was look at the longevity of people county by county in the United States. I mean, they went county by county and calculated the longevity, and they did it color coding. The people who are the longest-lived people in America in the upper Midwest and the Plain States. We're talking about eastern Montana, north and south Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, northern Missouri, eastern Nebraska, and Kansas. These are the longest lived people in America in the upper Midwest and the Plain States. The shortest lived people in America come from the southeast part of the United States, the old South, if you will, from Chesapeake Bay down to central Texas. There's a very distinct demarcation, and this in the old South is called the heart attack, stroke, and cancer belt of America. How many of you have ever heard that phrase before? Southeast part of the United States, this is the cancer, heart attack, and stroke belt of America. The people in the upper Midwest and the Plain States live 20 years longer than the people in the South. 20 years longer! They have the same insurance, they have the same medications, the same idiot doctors, the same hospitals, got the same. And yet the people in the upper Midwest and the Plain States live 20 years longer. What's the difference? Well, the people in the upper Midwest and the Plain States primarily, there's exceptions of course, but primarily, at least historically and culturally in those areas, they cook everything by roasting and stewing. How do people cook in the Old South? Frying. There is fried potatoes and fried fish and chicken fried steak and fried green tomatoes and fried okra and fried hush puppies. I mean, it's been alleged that people in the Old South even fry water. And because of the free radicals and the trans fatty acids that are created by frying, the rate of cancer and heart attack and stroke is higher. And so if you do nothing else, but never again, ever, ever, ever put a French fry or anything fried in your mouth, you will add 20 healthful years to your life. Hoo-ah! And you'll save a lot of money. And cleaning up your home, it's a lot easier to clean up your home when you've stewed as opposed to frying. So you're going to save a lot of money, and you'll add 20 healthful years to your life if you never again eat anything fried. Goodbye churches, goodbye Popeye, goodbye French fries. I mean, I can go into McDonald's and have a nice sandwich and a salad now. I don't eat the French fries. I don't drink the soft drinks. You can go in McDonald's, have a nice meal, but you don't want to eat the fried stuff. That's where the dangerous part. You know, my tape, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, doctors were always angry with me because they said doctors only live to be 58. So they redid their own study, and to make a long story short, they came out 5 years later, and all the medical journals, they said, Wallach lied. He lied. He wasn't right. Doctors don't live to be 58. Like Wallach said, they live to be 56. I missed it by 2 years. So they don't bother me on that one anymore. And they're obligated to publish it because somebody had donated the money for the study. So why do we listen to a group of people whose average lifespan is 56 on longevity? Whoa, that's not very bright. What do doctors die from? Diabetes, heart disease, stroke, cancer. Hello? My favorite doctor obituaries are the fitness doctors, the sports medicine doctors who die at 38 while jogging. I love the ones who are cardiologists. They teach cardiology at Harvard Medical School and die at 48 of a heart attack. Why do we listen to those people? Well, they're doctors. Well, there's general contractors who have licenses from the state to build buildings and bridges and roads. Yet people still go to Home Depot and paint their own house and retile their own house and fix a loose board on a porch. It's time, folks. People still go to doctors because they don't know that there's options available. Who's going to tell them there's options? We are! Hoorah! Okay. I want to end up with that reminder that if it's to be, it's up to me. If it's to be, it's up to us. Just don't expect everybody to believe us. And so we can only save them that will be saved. And so we have to keep talking. We have to keep sharing the message. That's what this is all about. And if we do this, you will be rewarded beyond your wildest dreams because we are going to be the Home Depot of healthcare in the next decade. Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah!
Information and statements regarding dietary supplements discussed have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.